Welcome to Progressive Opinions of Color, a podcast that seeks to create space for people of color in conversations about economics, politics, and culture. I'm your host, Nancy Wu, and today I am joined with Leanna and Ashley from COPE Collective to talk about Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month. We had an episode a few episodes back with COPE Collective where we talked about the importance of representation in literature, and we gave a lot of book recs there. And so for this, we actually recorded this as an Instagram Live where Leanna and Ashley asked me some questions about being Asian American in the midst of what's been happening in the world lately, and also the joys of being Asian American in the US. So this is a recording of that Instagram Live. Be sure to check out their video on COPE Collective's Instagram account, which will be linked below. But if you want to listen to this while walking, we have a version here as well of the recording. And it's going to be mainly just me answering questions about myself. So that's kind of weird. It sounds like I'm getting interviewed, but this is definitely a once in a occasional kind of Instagram Live-y whatever version of something that we'll have on the podcast. So yeah, thanks for tuning in. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, please, if you really enjoy this, because podcasting is a lot of work and a lot of fun. And as a new podcast, we need all the support we can get to keep us going and making more episodes. So really excited for this episode, and now let's get started.
Hey, Nancy.
Hey, y'all.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you guys again. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
Well, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm super excited to chat. Why don't you kind of chat a little bit about who you are and what you do for work or out of work, whatever comes to mind.
I'm Nancy, and I am Asian American, Chinese American. I was born in China and moved to the U.S. when I was 6 with my family. We immigrated over, and then I got my major in economics and gender studies and in government, and then went on to get my master's in economics and now work full-time in economics. Doing real estate, housing, and lately I've been looking into a lot of affordability issues and just housing gaps across the country, as well as in New York City specifically. And then started this podcast back in August last year in the middle of the pandemic, when I just realized like I had so much feelings and emotions about politics. This can go into a productive platform, and started this podcast to just kind of invite more underrepresented voices, people into conversations about economics, politics, and culture. And of course, everything is political. So lately, we've been talking a lot more about identity. The past 2 episodes have focused on Asian American heritage and identity in the midst of all of the racism that has been happening in the country, that has been happening, but has recently really stepped up into the national news. On the side of that, I also really enjoy reading, and we have an episode with all of us just talking about books and what it means to have more representation in storytelling. So yeah, that's a bit about me.
Yeah, you guys are really educated on a lot of the topics that you're discussing. So I think if people want to learn more about economics and politics, your podcast would definitely be one to check out. I feel like Ashley and I have a little bit more of a surface level discussion on a lot of these topics, but you guys really dive in on another level, so it's great.
Yeah, every episode is a new guest who is a lot of women, a lot of queer folks, all people of color. Everyone has a really unique background, so I'm always interested in hearing people's lives and their perspectives and how they got to where they are, just to know more about them. And also, we'll talk about politics and econ in a very like digestible way, because most of my friends who listen to the podcast are just like, oh, I learned more about politics through hearing you guys talk, but I wouldn't have looked this up otherwise because it's a lot. And so that is the goal here, to just like get people excited about topics and to like learn more about both of these topics.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of these things are really important, but definitely overwhelming. I know that I definitely do not have a proper understanding of even Canadian government. Mm-hmm. Often these things are explained in a way that's so confusing, or maybe even intentionally explained in a way to make people uninterested in learning about it. Mm-hmm. And just keeping us, you know, in the dark a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with that. Definitely not digestible by any sense of the means.
Americans don't know anything about Canadian politics either, because we only know about American politics, because America is the United States is the center of the universe.
I will say that, yeah, it's like you guys are like the globe. If someone were to point at the globe, like, where's the United States? I feel like there's some people in the States who'd be like, we are the globe. Like, there's nothing else. Like,
yeah,
that's it.
It's always interesting to me that, like, people in every country learn about American politics and our states and everything, and, like, no one growing up here learned about,
yeah,
things in Canada or Mexico, yeah, or neighboring countries or in other,
yeah,
countries.
That's a good point. Yeah, I distinctly remember having to color in elementary school, like, a map of the United States, and you color it in and, like, having to name all the states.
Oh my gosh. So, yeah.
I just remember being grateful that we didn't have as many provinces as you guys have states, because I was like, that's just not, I'm not memorizing that. I can't. There's just too many. And there's, like, too many weird ones where you're like, is that really a state? And you question yourself, like, I don't think that is, but it actually is. And there's, like, what, 40 something? No, thank you.
Yeah, it is really hard.
No, you'll see?
50 states.
Nope.
Americans don't know that either. That was part of my citizenship test, like, just talking about naming state capitals of pretty well-known states, and also talking about, like, how many states are there and how many branches of government are there. But that was all on the citizenship test that I had to take.
I would fail 100%.
I'm curious to know how you've been coping with kind of where the world's been at lately, and also with all the rise of anti-Asian racism, and also how it's all kind of just seemed to disappear from social in the last week. Like, I feel like everyone was really heavily talking about it for about a week and a half, and then it's since just dissipated. And how have you been kind of coping with that?
In the past week, I guess everything in the news that I've been seeing is just about Israel and Palestine, and there's just been so much happening there. It seems like that every week, every day, there's always a new news item that has been ongoing. Israel and Palestine has been ongoing for quite a long time now, and now it's making its move in the news again. Same with crimes against Asian Americans. They have been ongoing, and it's just recently been in the news. And what the news chooses to portray or not portray, I realize, doesn't necessarily mean that it's not going on or that it's not important. It's still an issue. Most of American politics just comes up in cycles through the news, but they have been persistent problems. And thanks to news coverage, more people become aware of these issues. But I see these news cycles as learning opportunities for a lot of folks who haven't otherwise thought about these issues before. Personally, I have been bad and sad for a long time in the very beginning of this. Back in the end of March and mid-April, beginning of April, when the shootings at the massage parlors happened, I couldn't sleep that night. And looking on the news, everyone was talking about, all of the Asian community was talking about it on Twitter, on Instagram. But no one else really talked about it at that point, especially because all of the national headlines did not mention race until much later, when people got mad about the fact that they weren't mentioning race, and then news outlets then had to respond to the public favor. But for the longest time, it was just, it felt like Asian Americans weren't seen and our politics weren't seen. And then suddenly people started seeing us. Discussions at work started happening about how to prevent the bystander effect, how to step in, how to, like, prevent Asian American discrimination. And I was like, wow, all of these things I could not have imagined happening a year ago or before. But why does all this hate have to happen in order for people to be aware of things that have already been happening? And yes, Trump's China virus crap definitely exacerbated the severity of the racism. But it was just a mixture of feelings. At first, just feeling like really, really awful that this is happening, and then realizing that, it's kind of weird that, like, more people are talking about Asian Americans. All of my time here in America, I moved to this country when in 2000. There's never been a time when I've noticed people really recognizing Asian Americans as a minority group that goes through things like racism. It's just always been the like model minority stereotype. And yeah, it's just been really interesting to see this come up all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of casual racism towards Asian Americans or Asian people in general that people think is okay. I've seen it on social media and people talking about it in articles going back and talking about different shows, like The Office, I think was one of them, of just like Asian American characters that had like specific tropes that were harmful and damaging. And when you see that in like a big TV show, it makes like, the everyday person think it's okay to do those and to perpetuate those. And I guess maybe because as BIPOC people, we've always had to deal with something. So in your head, you're like, well, if I feel like this when someone makes a joke, then obviously like you're kind of more self-aware. But I feel like definitely this year with the anti-Asian hate crimes that have happened and last year with Black Lives Matter, people are starting to like wake up from like all the things that they did that were problematic. And some people are leaning in and learning and other people are calling it out and saying that it's like PC and we can't talk anymore. And just like, no, people now no longer are going to sit there and take your racist jokes and laugh at them. We're going to call you out on it. Deal with it.
These racist jokes and tropes, it's like, come on. Everyone has been saying these things. There are tropes and stereotypes for a reason. Step up your like humor game if you're trying to make a funny joke. But this is so old. Now that we know it's perpetuating things that we don't need to be perpetuating, you can use that as an excuse to find better comedy.
I think it's odd too what people say, because like especially with comedians, like I know there's a couple of comedians that, you know, some old skits and things have come out or jokes that have come out that have been problematic things. Because it's like comedy, it's okay. Like it's just a joke, so like don't be. But it's on the flip side, I feel like if a BIPOC person then does something and makes a joke about white people, they get really sensitive. So it's like one of those things where like, oh no, you should have all the power to make all the jokes you want. Doesn't matter how it hurts other people, but we can't then turn it around. You know what I mean? And it just feels odd. I feel like people have just felt like for a long time that they could have like a free pass and say whatever they wanted to. And now we're finally having that reckoning of, no, you need to educate yourself and realize that's always been wrong. It wasn't just wrong this year. Tropes about Asian people were wrong last fall, last spring, 5 years ago. It wasn't just all of a sudden like March and February when, you know, there was a huge rise in anti-Asian hate crimes that it was wrong.
That's such a good point too about the comedians. I feel like comedians get away with so much because people are like, well, they don't mean it, it's just a part of their act.
Yeah,
like, okay, well, think about the people who you're affecting and think about how small actions like that or small jokes built up over time do cause hate crimes. Like, it's because people have been fed all of this misinformation, including by way of jokes. Mm-hmm. And so eventually it kind of manifests physically and hate crimes. So it's pretty wild.
And I feel like it goes from comedy into like pop culture. Mm-hmm. So like you're seeing a comedian make it in a skit or say it in a skit, and then you're also seeing it in a TV show and then in a movie. And so people, and I don't think people really realize how much they internalize from their surroundings and think that something's okay when it's not. And then also if you're surrounding yourself with people who look just exactly like you and not people from that culture, then I know 100% at some point in your life, you're going to like, you know, mess up and say something that's like problematic in front of someone and be like, what's the big deal? It's like, well, also maybe just because the people you hang out with wouldn't be offended because it doesn't affect them the same way.
I think comedy is really so powerful as a tool for both good and evil, because comedy can bring up politics. And so many people get their news from comedy, like Trevor Noah's Daily Show. I go to that every morning when I can't even bear to look at what's happening in the news because he makes it funny. And comedy, by adding humor to things, allows people to hear hard truths. At the same time, because comedy is so prevalent and so different consumers of it, making racist jokes and saying problematic things as a comedian does perpetuate those kinds of myths and racism in society because you have so much influence. Yeah, I remember watching Dave Chappelle has always made racist jokes about his own race, about every race, about women. And I remember watching his skit on SNL. He got really woke about race, and I was like, about Black Lives Matter. And I was like, oh, that's great. And then he made these jokes about the China virus and Asian people. And I'm like, and then he made more jokes about women. I'm like, all right, so You got woke about your own like identity as a Black man in America. That's one step forward. I'm glad. But
then a 10 steps back. I feel like I'm going to start calling it like the woke for 5 minutes, like the people for like anti-Asian like racism who like get woke for like 5 minutes and then are back to being asleep again. Same with last year with Black Lives Matter. I feel like people just like wake up for like a short period of time and then like revert back. You know, like a software update they just can't handle or something. It's so weird. Like some of the people I remember posting like in the past couple months or in the past year. And then now I'm like, did someone take over your account? Do you remember? And it goes to show you too, with social media, like the power of social media has, but also like the laziness it can give people, because you could just, all you have to do is repost something, put on your stories. It's good for 24 hours. You feel like you've done something and then you move on with your life. And I think that's something that a lot of people need to realize is that for, you know, Asian people with dealing with these anti-Asian hate crimes, like that's not just something that you post on Instagram and then go about your day. It makes you think, like you think about, am I going to go outside? Is someone going to say something to me? Is someone going to, you know, get in my personal space? Is someone going to, you know, make a derogatory joke or like try and like physically harm me? And I think that's really scary. And people really don't realize that is a thing. And that's an experience that a lot of people are living right now.
100%. It's so easy to be woke performatively on Instagram, but it's less easy to actually do the work of standing up when someone says something racist to your coworker at work, or less visible things where you actually have to do the work. It's hard. I don't even know where to start with that, with a lot of that.
Have you been dealing with any kind of anti-Asian hate personally since everything's been going on with COVID? I mean, I can only imagine being in the States with, as you said, Trump going around calling it the China virus. I don't know. I guess we have this perception of America sometimes that Americans are just like, you know, racist dick bags acting a fool in the streets.
Listen, the Capitol riot did happen. So like, I feel like I'm justified in like a little bit of that, you know?
Oh my god, this is so weird to see other countries' perspective of Americans, because yeah, it does sound like a really scary country. And it is, when you think about how many crimes are happening all the time and the fact that people just wield guns around here, it's a very scary country. Like my relatives in China are just fearful, living in fear for our lives all the time. They're like, wow, you guys didn't even handle COVID, it's been still going on and November. Oh my gosh, I hope you guys are okay. It's so scary out there. But yeah, me, luckily, I have not faced any aggressive acts. There's been times when just you'll meet a dude out there in the grocery store or on the train when I was coming back to LA back when COVID first hit, and people will just ask me where I'm from and ask me if I'm Chinese and then ask me about my thoughts on the virus. Stuff like that is so annoying. It's still just like, okay, the first thing you notice about me is my race. Okay, and you're making an assumption about my race to ask me this. But it hasn't gotten to the point of violence or anything extremely hateful. That being said, I have only lived this whole time in very progressive liberal cities. And it is not the case for the majority of Asian Americans living in the States. I feel like all of my friends, I've seen them post at least once or share if they don't post something about some racist incident that they faced just walking on the streets or someone yelling at something. But yeah, my parents are very scared, and I'm scared for them because so much of these hate crimes are happening towards the elderly and people who seem more vulnerable when they're walking on the streets. And in my hometown, there was actually a murder of an Asian mother, a Chinese mother, and her daughter. The police ruled it as not a hate crime, but we can't really say that for sure because it's really hard to define something as a hate crime because, I mean, it's just really hard. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's not, that wasn't a hate crime, but they happen to be Chinese American or Chinese. That just really shook my whole town and me and my family a lot because we've always perceived our hometown to be safe. It's in California. It's middle class or upper middle class. It happened right next to my high school. This happened a month ago. And I just remember like I would go home to my hometown and always just feel safe and associated as where I grew up and my parents and our first place in America that we settled down in and like, have always called a home. And all of a sudden it felt like it just wasn't safe anymore.
I saw something on Instagram a while ago about some guy who, I don't know how they were related, but there was a man and a woman, and he said to her, like, why don't you take the stairs? Like, it's only, like, a couple floors or whatever. And she's like, well, because the elevator has a camera, and the stairwell doesn't. And he just kind of, like, was like, oh.
Wow.
Like, there you go. Like, the life that you live is different than someone else's experience and the things that you have to think about. And protecting yourself. It's serious. Like, I mean, there are videos. There have been plenty of videos shared on social media, and there's proof of it. Like, it happens to people, and better to be safe than sorry, you know?
On a more positive note, I want to know, it's in Canada here, it's Asian Heritage Month. In America, it's Asian and Pacific Islanders Heritage Month, I believe. What do you do day to day, or just in general, to celebrate and honor your heritage as an Asian woman?
Ooh, I love this question. There's nothing explicitly that I do, but it has only become obvious to me very recently, like 5 years ago, that I'm very proud of being multicultural. I've always been proud of it. I've never really rejected. A lot of kids grow up and like don't want to be associated with being Chinese, but growing up, just because I was raised in China and went back to China a lot as a kid, I've always liked a lot of things about China. And wanted to like make my style growing up a mixture of Western trends and Chinese trends. But it didn't really sink into me that I'm just happy to be multicultural until after college. I went to college in a very white town in New Hampshire, was exposed to different races and the privilege that white Americans face in the US for the first time. At least conscious of it because I took a sociology class and didn't know anything about racism before that because of high school education in the US. But once that happened, I was like, oh, there are a lot of privileges that you get in this country for being white, but I don't really like that this town doesn't have really good Asian food or like much of my culture. And I was like, well, I really like my hometown because it's so diverse and it has so many things. And then I would go back and it just started like that. I was like, wow, I'm so happy to have grown up in a more diverse hometown, to just know Mandarin fluently when a lot of people are taking Mandarin as a class, to get to go to the Chinese grocery store and celebrate all these holidays that my parents celebrate. And then it started like that. It was like pretty superficial. It was like, cool, I have good food and good, I have a language and I have like these fun things to do. But then as it grew more and as I like started just learning more about the world and things, I realized like what to just like have that other language, have that other culture. And there's just so many awesome things about being Chinese, about being in the US as an immigrant that you don't get to experience if you've just lived here all your life in one predominant culture. Just all of the different holidays that we have. This all sounds really superficial because I can't think of like any examples, tangible examples that aren't superficial. I love going back to China to visit my grandparents. And my accent is so heavily regional that I sound like a rural farmer. And I love that I can go to China and haggle and be mistaken for a local. I love that I have family in China, that it gives me an excuse to go out of the country to visit and get a visa to a country that America is on such bad terms with that it's very hard to go to. I mean, who knows in the future? I don't know if I'll ever get to go to China again. And to just be exposed to all of this art, all of this history, all of this culture, and this like gravitation towards learning more about other cultures because I've had that experience as a minority, as an immigrant growing up here. I don't think I would be the person that I am today if I weren't Chinese, but I think about these things all the time in my gratitude journal. I've been exposed to so many amazing Asian American artists, so much good literature. We talked about this at our podcast episode, but I've had this gravitation towards reading books by women and people of color because of just coming from a heritage that makes you naturally more curious about that and not take that for granted. And I think that's just opened me up to a lot more beauty and this world.
That was basically all the questions that I wanted to ask. Ashley, do you have anything else to add?
Ooh, can I ask, what's your favorite, like, Asian food or, like, food item? Is there something specific? And if you can't narrow it down to one thing or, like, meal or if you can, top three, maybe?
Ooh, I love Northeastern Chinese food, which is very different from the types of Chinese food that is popular outside of China. It's a lot of like spices, garlic and onions, and just savory flavors. Growing up, I ate way more lamb and pork than I have ever had chicken and beef. So anything that's a stir fry with lamb in it, I love hot pot, which especially with the really spicy soup bases, you can boil any vegetable, any seafood, any meat you want in there, and then like dip it in different sauces. I like to dip my hot pot in a mixture of sesame paste and fermented tofu, fermented bean curd, garlic, scallions, and cilantro. That's like my go-to meal every time I see my parents for the first time in a while. I do like dim sum a lot and noodles, even though dim sum is like not part of my region at all. Like, I've never had dim sum in China. I've only had it in the US, but it's so good.
It's so good.
I'm hungry now. Yeah, there's so much food. Every time I get to like go to a Chinese restaurant and be like, oh, I know this. I have been exposed to this kind of food in my lifetime to the point where I know the joy to be found here. I'm just like, wow, so glad to be Chinese. This is so great.
Sorry, I'm a food-oriented human, so it's just like it's going to come down to food for me.
It's so good. There's so much that like is outside of the American or the what we see on TV. There's just so many different types of Chinese food. There's 56 ethnicities in China, or recognized ethnicities, and all of those ethnicities have their own food. My dad's ethnicity like has a different food from my mom's, and it's like all really, it's just all tasty stuff. Gotta visit to know and try all of these things.
That's wild that you said that, because it is very true. I feel like in North American culture, Chinese food is seen as one kind of type of food, and that's it. So it makes me very excited as a foodie to know that there's many other types of Chinese food out there, because, you know, I'm always hungry. So, and, yeah.
There are so many. Yes.
Well, thanks for sharing with us, and thanks for being here today. Yeah. It was really great having you. Perhaps we could have Sonia on another time, and then we can chat with her one-on-one and kind of get her thoughts on some of the stuff that's been going on.
Yeah. Sounds great. It was great connecting with you guys again.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Fun chatting. All right, thanks so much for tuning in. That was the conversation. Make sure to check out the Instagram live version if you want to see our faces and our reactions for the full conversation. Be sure to rate and review on Apple Podcasts and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, any platform that you use. And we'll see you in the next episode.